You're listening to LawPod UK from the creators of the UK Human Rights Blog. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. In this podcast, we're bringing you the first of three highlights from One Crown Office Row's 2018 seminar, Truth, Justice and Accountability, the Modern Challenges of Major Inquests and Inquiries. Starting the conference, we have One Crown Office Row's Matthew Hill, looking specifically at lessons and warnings from Bloody Sunday and Hillsborough.
Something that I learned when studying history is, for more pompous and sonorous the disclaimer at the start of the talk or the work, the greater leeway you have to ignore it as you go through. So, opposed though I am to lazy historical analogy, I'm now going to attempt to look at some of the problems of modern inquiries and inquests by focusing on two that have gone before, Bloody Sunday and Hillsborough. I'm not going to talk about the events of either of those days or the detail of the processes and proceedings that followed them. All I will say about them is they are both tragedies that involved individuals and numerous deaths. 13 died on Bloody Sunday, 96 died directly as a result of what happened at Hillsborough, and the truth is that we don't really know how many people died indirectly as a result of problems resulting from both of those tragedies. Both were followed by numerous inquiries and investigations, and we'll look at some of those shortly. And both were marked by controversy in the way that those proceedings were handled and by the conflicting narratives that arose from them. In terms of Bloody Sunday, first of all, the events of the day, and it happened on the 30th of January 1972, 13 people were shot by members of 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment. That was followed immediately by a public inquiry headed by the then Lord Chief Justice, Lord Widgery. That was widely rejected as a whitewash, and the inquiry was then followed by a series of inquests conducted by Major O'Neill, the local coroner. He came to a rather different view, and when giving his verdicts, he gave a press statement, the conclusion of his inquests, in which he referred to all of the killings as being sheer, unadulterated murder, something that a coroner is perhaps not entitled to do, but he felt compelled to do anyway. There then followed decades of campaigning, which led to a new inquiry under Lord Savile, which ran, as you'll see, for some 12 years, and that resulted in a report that was highly critical of the soldiers and exonerated all of those who had been killed, some of whom Lord Widgery had said may have been handling weapons or close to those who had been handling weapons. Hillsborough, everybody will know the events of that day, 96 people being killed at a crush at a football stadium. And in some ways, what followed was the reverse of Bloody Sunday. There was an initial public inquiry headed by Lord Justice Taylor, and that was highly critical of the way that the police match had been policed. And it exonerated fans from causing the disaster that followed. But thereafter, the inquests, contradistinction to Bloody Sunday, resulted in conclusions of accidental death, which was highly distressing for the families, and led to what many felt was something of a false narrative, particularly focusing on fan behaviour as an underlying cause of the disaster that happened. Again, there followed decades of campaigning. There was a review of the papers in the case by Lord Justice Stuart Smith in the mid-90s, but that didn't lead to any further investigations being recommended, and the matter was again kicked into the long grass, save for the campaigns that went on. Those led eventually in 2010 to a further paper review being conducted by the Hillsborough Independent Panel. That produced a report that was highly critical of the police, exonerated the fans, and pointed to areas where, in the opinion of the authors, there had been attempts at covering up some of the evidence that pointed towards police culpability. It led as well to the quashing of the original inquests on the basis that there was a suggestion that some of those who had died had been alive for longer than the original coroner had thought. New inquests were held, the inquests under Lord Justice Goldring between 2014 and 16. The result of those was a finding of unlawful killing and questions being asked of a jury about fan behaviour and whether that contributed to the disaster, the answers given were a resounding no. So those are the outline of the proceedings that followed them. And when looking at them, I was trying to think about what common themes could be drawn from them, what lessons could be learned from them. And the first observation that I came to was really just how much more is expected these days of public inquiries and major inquests than was the case back in the 70s and the 80s and indeed the 90s. If one looks at something that Lord Widgery said at the start of his inquiry in 1972 about the purpose of the inquiry, what he was trying to do, you have this rather Olympian statement that all he's trying to do is form an objective view of the events and put them in the right order. Not concerned with making moral judgments, its task was to try and form an objective view of those events and the sequence in which they occurred so that those who were concerned to form judgment would have a firm basis on which to reach their conclusions. And that contrasts with the classic statement of the purpose of an inquiry or an inquest now, which is taken from the case of Armin and Lord Bingham's observations on this, which are now widely cited up and down the country in coronial courts each day. And you will see that a far broader, a far more ambitious approach for what an inquiry or what an inquest should do. And you'll see to ensure that as far as possible the full facts are brought to life, that culpable and discreditable conduct is exposed and brought to public notice, that suspicion of deliberate wrongdoing, if unjustified, is allayed, that dangerous practices and procedures are rectified, and that those who have lost relatives may at least have the satisfaction of knowing that lessons learned from his death may save the lives of others. Much now is projected onto inquests by the judiciary, by lawyers, by the government, and by the public as well. This is understandable, and to some degree it is to be welcomed, but it makes everything much, much harder. And it comes at a cost, both in time and money and effort. And it also leads, I think, to a central paradox that runs throughout all of the observations of my talk tonight, that much more is expected of these public inquiries at a time when there is much more scepticism about a judge's ability to deliver. The old days where Lord Scarman said X, therefore X must be correct, have long gone. And there is now, and we'll see it in the contemporary public inquiries that are going on at the present time, a much higher degree of scepticism and much less deference to the judges who are running these public inquiries. Again, that is to be welcomed to some degree, but it makes the job a lot, lot harder. The second observation that I have is about trust and independence. In terms of trust, the question of how one appoints and trusts a tribunal, the concern about the background of a judge being asked to chair one of these inquiries is not new. Lord Widgery was treated with scepticism because he was a former army officer, but then again, so was Major O'Neill, who conducted the inquest and came to that very different conclusion. I think the overarching lesson from what has gone on in Hillsborough and Bloody Sunday is that trust is hard won and it is very easily lost. The two examples that I give on the slide about Heath and Widgery and Lord Justice Stuart Smith are these. When Lord Widgery was appointed to chair the first inquiry into Bloody Sunday, he was also invited into Downing Street to have a quick chat with the Prime Minister. And in the best traditions of the civil service, the hugely embarrassing conversation was diligently minuted and kept in the National Archives so that it could be produced 30 years later to the detriment of all involved. And what the Prime Minister said to the man who had just been appointed to lead the public inquiry into the events of the day where British troops had shot dead 13 British citizens, what the Prime Minister said was, and I quote, "It had to be remembered that we were in Northern Ireland fighting not only a military war, but also a propaganda war." So some helpful advice for the judge as he sets off fearlessly on his independent task. Now, that didn't come out at the time, but it did come out subsequently, and obviously it is to the massive detriment of the credibility of the Widgery inquiry that followed. Lord Justice Stuart Smith, when he first met the families of those who died at Hillsborough, was heard saying to one of them, this was in the context of the fact that a large element of the discussion about Hillsborough was whether or not the fans had arrived too late on the day and caused problems for the police. And Lord Justice Stuart Smith said to one of the fathers of those who died, "Have you got a few of your people, or are they like the Liverpool fans, turn up at the last minute?" This was on the first meeting. He apologised in person, repeatedly and profusely, and no doubt sincerely thereafter. But there was no way back from that misstep. So you have to earn your trust, and you have to remember that it's very easy to lose it. On independence, it's a point that I will return to later, but in short, if you don't have independence, then you don't have anything. When people now call for a judge-led inquiry, all they are asking for, really, is for an inquiry which is being chaired by somebody who is independent. The next observation is about terms of reference and scope. There is always a balance to be struck here. Too narrow and you leave areas of importance unexamined and you may distort the historical record. Too wide and it takes longer and it costs more and it undermines the credibility of an inquiry if it goes on for years and years and years and the question is repeatedly asked, is it worth it? Now, Lord Widgery took 80 days to report and his report ran to about 100 paragraphs. Lord Savile took 12 years to report and his report ran to 11 volumes. And it's been reported that the inquiry cost some £200 million. Lord Justice Taylor, 108 days to report in his interim report, in part to get it done before the next football season, but subsequently criticised for not looking closely enough at the emergency response to the disaster. So always this balance to try to strike. And much harder these days because of the far higher demands of disclosure. The other point to make about the terms of reference is that there is always something else to consider. In Bloody Sunday, that was the Ballymurphy killings. In Hillsborough, it was the policing of Orgreave. There is always somebody pushing you to do something more, to go one stage further back in the chain of causation. And again, if you do so, then you run the risk of extending your inquiry, losing focus, and losing credibility as a result of doing that. So it is not always better to go bigger. There is also, I think, a fundamental problem in that, but it risks moving a judge-led inquiry away from a judge's core function. Judges are very good at finding facts and establishing causation, but they are not particularly well-placed and not necessarily better placed than others to place events into a wider historical or cultural context. But that isn't their job. That's not what they're trained to do. That's not what they've spent a career doing. And I think there is a danger now that there is an attempt to push public inquiries to be the final word about a big, major public event, rather than contributing to the debate about it. In my view, they are far better suited to doing the latter, contributing but not seeking to end all of the debate. On to more practical points. The evidence, both Hillsborough and Bloody Sunday, show the importance of having independent investigators. Bloody Sunday, the original inquiry was let down originally by the Royal Military Police looking into the actions of soldiers. In Hillsborough, it was one police force looking into the actions of another police force. This didn't command confidence and didn't build trust. Similarly, the selection and sequencing of witnesses. In the original Hillsborough inquests, you had a process whereby the first set of evidence that was heard was all from local residents and local publicans who generally spoke about fans drinking. Then you had police officers who spoke about fans drinking. And it was only after you had had those blocks of evidence that you then heard from fans who gave a different view of what had been happening in the lead up to the game. And this was much criticised, particularly as that was a jury inquest. And it was something that the more recent inquests carefully avoided by mixing up the sources of the evidence and telling the story in a more chronological and rounded way. The final point is that expert evidence will be absolutely essential to any major public inquiry. Both Lord Widgery and the original coroner in the Hillsborough inquest, Dr. Popper, were let down by the experts that they instructed, and that explains in part why their findings were so heavily criticised. Engaging families and victims, essential now to the success of a public inquiry and important to building trust, building confidence and ensuring that justice is not only done but seen to be done. Representation is a critical element, but the role of somebody representing core participants or interested persons isn't just to be a mouthpiece. It is to advise their clients, to educate them about the process and to seek to assist the inquiry or the inquest in coming to its conclusions. It's not just about trying to put your case. My experience and the experience of having looked at these two sets of proceedings in particular shows very clearly that inquiries and inquests work best when everybody approaches it in an inquisitorial spirit and tries to assist at getting to the truth. Disclosure, I'm not going to bang on about disclosure because it's the driest of all topics, but it is vital. Showing your workings is an important element of a current public inquiry's work. And I think a good example of that can be shown from Lord Hutton's inquiry. But although the conclusions were widely criticised, the fact that so much material was brought into the public domain allowed a sensible and informed debate about the conclusions that Lord Hutton had reached. And survivors, the unsquared circle is the fact that forensically, one doesn't really need to hear from too many survivors because they will tell roughly the same story in roughly the same way about how awful it was. But there is a deeper purpose of a public inquiry or a major inquest, which is to inform the public debate about what it was like and to act as a forum and hopefully as some form of catharsis for those who were involved in it. And it's difficult for the inquiry or the inquest to try to strike that balance between involving enough of those who were directly affected by the disaster without ending up in a situation where a numbers game is played and you have X number of witnesses for one side, therefore you must have Y number of witnesses for the other, and the whole process takes too long and costs too much. But it does tie closely with the final point that I would make, which is the individual. Public disasters are private tragedies. The original Hillsborough inquests were widely criticised for losing sight of that fact, treating it too much like a sausage factory, one inquest followed by another times 96. And it was an approach that we tried to avoid in the more recent Hillsborough inquests. So my conclusions comes back to this paradox about greater expectations and greater scepticism. And how do you deal with that? Well, first, only have a major public inquiry or a major inquest when it is truly necessary, because they are big, cumbersome things that will take a long time and cost a lot of money, take up a lot of resource, and cost a great deal of emotional energy for all involved. The second point, I think, is the most important: independence. If you don't have that, then there is simply no point. And it cuts both ways. And any attempt, no matter how well-meaning, to load the dice in favour of one side or the other will be absolutely disastrous to the outcome. The third point is to try to set your boundaries sensibly and fairly. Earn your trust. Be transparent. The two go together. And the point that I have just made, that an inquisitorial approach is far more effective than an adversarial one. The final point is to try to get it right, because as both Bloody Sunday and Hillsborough show, if you don't, the cost is truly awful. Thank you.